Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the June 7th Behind Our Eyes book launch. I'm your host, Annie Chapetta, and tonight we have a very special guest, author Feather Chow. But before we get started, and although we are here tonight to launch Feather's illustrated children's book, People Safari, I want to say I'm going to give a plug for Whisper's Extraordinary Book 1. If you haven't read it, please read it because it is awesome.
Thank you.
Yep. So the team assisting Feather tonight is Lisa Bush, who will read excerpts, Leonor Dvorkin, who will describe some of the illustrations, and myself, who will be talking with Feather before the Q&A opens for other questions. And my co-host tonight is Marlene Massat, who is helping me out with technical stuff. So I'm going to read a little bit of Feather's bio and a little bit about her book, and then we're going to get going. Okay, she says, I am a single mother living in Texas with my children, two grand puppies, and a grand piggy guinea pig. I'm totally blind due to a battle with retinoblastoma, and I love to teach, and I've been writing since the first grade, starting out in my grandma's old typewriter. Although my first book wasn't published until the very end of 2020, the pandemic forced me to slow down from many activities, and I decided to use some of my newly acquired spare time to focus on publishing books that I've written throughout the years. To date, I've managed to publish 8 books, and there are 20 more books in various stages of production about the book. Take a journey to spy upon the peculiarities of the world of people through the eyes of animals, with a fresh perspective on human behavior. As seen by a deer family and their raccoon guide, this book will get you thinking like an animal scientist and have you laughing as well. Not only are these musings fun, but they just might bring us closer to the natural world and deepen our respect for it, making us better stewards of our environment in the future. Alrighty. So, hello, Feather. How are you?
Hello, Annie. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Well, it's great to have you here tonight. I'm so excited. I've interviewed you before, and it's always a pleasure to have you on and talk about yourself, your creativity, and what makes you such a wonderful author and makes you connected with so many readers, both young and adult. That's a unique talent, my friend.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So at this point, we talked about earlier, maybe you're having Lisa read an excerpt and having Leonor follow that up with maybe the cover illustrations. But before that, I wanted to ask you about your illustrator. Pardew is the person's name, right?
Pendu. Or Pandu, I think he's.
Yeah. How did you guys meet? And how did you just like find him online?
It's a really funny story, actually. So I was in an author illustrator group on Facebook, and it's one of those giant groups. And after I got my first book illustrated, I started looking for some alternatives because it's very costly to illustrate properly. I think you can easily spend, you know, $1,000 on a page nowadays. Yeah. So I thought there have to be some talented artists out there who would be willing to split profits. And so yeah. I posted in this illustrating and author group, and it was terrible. Actually, I had a horrible response. People were very indignant. They were like, you want an artist to work with, you know, for you for free and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no. They're like, well, you hire an illustrator to do your vision, you know? And I said, that's true, but I could also write something that they enjoyed drawing, you know? So although there were a lot of indignant people, I did get Pandu to respond. And he was like, yes, I would love to illustrate something and split the profits. So we did one book together that he finished last year. And then now I'm paying him to do more because my other ones aren't selling enough, but he gives me a really good deal and he's amazing. So
it sounds like you found the right person.
Yes.
Yeah. Networking really paid off. Yeah. So that's wonderful. Okay. Lisa, are you ready? And Lino, are you ready?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I don't know which one of you wants to go first.
I can start maybe.
Okay.
I also believe that people stand on their back feet in order to see the world around them from a higher vantage point, says Ranger Marco. Come, stand on your back hooves and tell us how much further you can see. Fawn tries and tries to stand on her back legs, but she keeps toppling over. Here, says Ranger Marco, put your front hooves on this tree, and we will help you to not fall over. Now, how far can you see?
Wow!
Exclaims Fawn. I really can see farther. I wish I could stand on my back hooves all the time. Even if it would make me look funny. As a roar builds in the distance, Fawn collapses onto her back in fright. There is a beast larger than I've ever seen coming this way, she pants. Joe and Buck help Fawn to her hooves. Okay, that's the first section.
Okay. Leonore, you want to start with the cover and then maybe pick another illustration?
Thank you. I'll be happy to do that. First of all, I am just filled with admiration for Pandu's work. Heather, is he in Indonesia? Is that where he lives?
Yeah, he's in Asia.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's just very kind of exotic the way he has, to me, looks like very tropical foliage. And the whole front cover is so colorful. The animals, the family of deer, are standing together. The father, Buck, at the top, and the mother, Doe, to the right. And then the girl, child, Fawn, to the left. And then Ranger Marco is down below them with his arms lifted. And he's wearing a brown ranger hat. And then all around them is this very lush foliage, big green leaves and berries and flowers. And it's just totally lovely. It's very, very colorful. And really, I'm just filled with admiration for his work. I think he's so talented. And Feather, I believe you told me he, at least at this time, he only charges like $75 an illustration.
Yeah.
Just an amazing price. I mean, I'm sure here in America, you would probably pay at least, you know, a few hundred dollars per illustration.
Yeah.
So the one with Fawn trying to stand on her back hooves here, let me find this. Okay, that's on page 19 is the illustration. And in the background, there are lots of buildings and the sky and a tree. And in the foreground, there's Fawn to the left and Ranger Marco to the right. And he's got like a big tree branch that he's trying to help her get up on. She's got her hooves lifted, you know, as though she's trying to get up on the branch. So that's the first one. And then the one where she topples over, she is falling backwards, and it's like he's looking kind of distressed and trying to catch her. And what has frightened her in the background, what she calls a beast, is a big truck that's street there. So they're quite intimidated by the trucks. Okay, so that's the first one there. Yeah, because the next part, Fawn and Ranger Marco are still together, but the next part has a bus coming, a school bus. Okay.
Okay. Just then, a torrent of small humans pours from their dens and begins running and screeching toward the second beast. Oh, cries Fawn. Aren't they afraid? Just watch, says Ranger Marco, as they quickly disappear inside the beast. The maw of the beast swishes shut and it roars off into the distance. Oh my, whispers Doe faintly. The beast has swallowed all the fawns. Human fawns are called children or kids, explains Ranger Marco. Like goats? Asks Fawn. How could you be so unfeeling, protests Doe. We have just seen children eaten by an enormous beast. Don't worry, says Ranger Marco. The beast will return in the afternoon and spit them back out again. I believe the beast minds the children during the day so that the adult humans can find food and rest and whatever else they busy themselves with. Wouldn't it be lovely to have a beast to swallow Fawn for a bit? Asks Buck. Buck, cries Doe. How could you say such a thing? Don't worry, Doe, says Buck. The beast would spit her out again in the afternoon. Yes, squeals Fawn. I would love to explore the belly of such a beast. Can I? Absolutely not, Doe says firmly. Deer keep all four hooves on the ground. We will not train monstrous beasts to look after our fawns.
Very good.
I love your voice reading. That's awesome.
Yes, right. Very good job.
So laughing at my own writing, but it's really reading that's great.
It's very humorous. Okay, so for the first picture with the torrent of small humans, he's drawn four kids. They look like, middle school age, sort of, heading toward the school bus. And what I like about all his illustrations when he draws people is he has them all different races.
Oh, yes. I told him to do that. He said no one's ever asked him to do that before. And I was really? Just like, yeah, I'd like to have everyone included and even kids with disabilities and all different sizes and shapes of kiddos. So
well, that's great.
What we try for anyway.
Yeah, he does a good job with that. And then the kids are simply heading toward a big yellow school bus. And in the background are the houses. I mean, they're on the sidewalk, of course. But again, there's some foliage in the front. There are some pretty leaves and berries. And then for that long part that you read, it's simply the back of the school bus. The school bus is heading away. And on the two sides are the houses there. So that one's a relatively plain illustration compared to most of the others. Very well done.
Thank you. This is Annie. I was wondering, why did you choose deer and a raccoon? Oh,
well, I don't know, honestly. Well, I really like raccoons, and this is going to be a series. And so he's the only character probably that's going to be in all of them, because he'll take different families on safari to different places. But I named him after one of my best friends who passed away during COVID. His name was Marco. So it's Ranger Marco for that. And then I just picked deer for the first one, since they're going to be on the outskirts of town. And I won't be able to do bigger animals when they go further in.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at with my question, was deer are fairly urbanized species now. And so are raccoons and possums and coyote. So I think that was a brilliant.
Maybe I kind of thought of, you know, him being around people more, being a raccoon and kind of being used to it. And then the deer coming in from the forest. Maybe they haven't been in much.
Right. I think that was just a great idea, especially, like you said, they're on the outskirts of life, you know, with humans, but they're not really, you know, not really there yet. So, yeah. So I'm sorry you interrupted. You guys want to continue?
Yeah, there's just one more.
Okay.
All right. How peculiar, says Doe. I have not seen human poo anywhere. Do they poo inside their dens? Yes, explains Fawn. Where do humans poo? That is the biggest mystery of all, says Ranger Marco. I once thought that they must do it inside their dens, but we should be able to smell it. Then I thought that they may feed it to their pet. Who knows? Maybe we will discover the truth someday. Gross, cries Fawn. How uncivilized, cries Buck.
And this is a very amusing illustration here. The deer family's on the left, and they're all looking puzzled. And then Ranger Marco is to the right, and he's got his hand on his chin, you know, like he's thinking. behind them is a pink house and an orange fence. And then again, in the front, the same foliage there. And I do want to say that Ranger Marco is rather larger than he would be in real life compared to a deer family, but they're all just wonderfully drawn. You know, the differentiation between the father and the mother and Fawn, it's really great. So that's what that one shows.
Thank you.
And could I then just describe a few others, the ones that don't have the text, or rather in the text, it's not mentioned?
Sure.
What is in the illustration?
I'm curious too.
Okay, so let's see. On page 16, so that's fairly early in the book. Let me find it here. Right. It's where Ranger Marco is talking about people having hands and fingers and what all they can do with those hands. So he says, like me, they have fingers, and these are very useful for opening things, washing food, picking up bits of food that are hard to get with their mouths, and so much more. So they're sort of like bubbles above him, you know, that show just a person's hands opening a jar. And then to the right of that is another hand washing under a kitchen faucet what appears to be a tomato. So
that was cute.
And then let's see, page 29. Okay, this is the very interesting section where the lady comes out of the house with this little dog, and the dog is on a leash, of course, and they simply talk about the dog having something. And one of them says, why is it so tiny? I guess this is Fawn speaking. Why is it so tiny? And why is the skin so bright around its middle? And so the dog is wearing a red sweater. But it's never called a sweater, so, you know, it doesn't necessarily be clear what the dog is wearing. And then, let's see, page 49, let me find that. Okay, this is part of the section where Fawn is lost and afraid. She can't get back to her family. She's in the middle of the city, and there's traffic all over. And So it says, Fawn hears a constant roar in the distance and she slowly goes to investigate. Ahead, she sees a long, smooth path, which is, of course, the street, with countless beasts roaring past in both directions. Mm. She never imagined that they could be so many different sizes, shapes, and colors. So the beasts, the roaring beasts, are the cars. And it shows quite a few cars, you know, crossing in front of her there. So I think that was about, oh, wait, one more. Oh, yes, this is important, I think. On page 52, right toward the end, Ranger Marco is trying to give Fawn a present of something that he has found on the forest floor. So it says, as they walk back toward the group of bushes, Ranger Marco picks up a bright object from the ground. Look, he says, here is something bright for you to wear in memory of your great adventure. No, thank you, sighs Fawn, etc. Well, what he has picked up is a heart-shaped pendant on a chain. So it's a red heart-shaped pendant.
Aww.
So, but that, again, that's
I wasn't sure what he picked to go there. Pardon? I wasn't sure what he picked. I just told him to pick up something. So he's creative. So, I like it.
Yes, right. Well, it's sweet because I think because not only do I like heart-shaped things myself, but Marco, you know, obviously feels affection for them. And I thought it was quite appropriate. Well, those are the ones that I could find. I mean, I read through it quickly again today.
Yeah.
Those were the ones that I could find that, you know, didn't have precisely matching, you know, the text and the pictures.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you both so much for doing that.
Yes. That gave extra context to what your book is, how meaningful it will be to all readers, and gave us extra insight into how the illustrations are going to impact the young folks when they read the book. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Sounds adorable.
Gotten a couple of complaints about how long it is. I'm like, well, if you don't like to read that long of a story at bedtime, just split it up.
Yeah, they're very, children's books tend to be very formulaic.
They're really short.
Yeah, short and, that's okay. That's why being an independent author has...
You don't have to go with those.
Yeah. You can experiment and you can set your own parameters.
Oh, and I think someone did say the language was too big for kids. And I was like, my kids understand all those words. That's fine. You know,
and that's how children learn new words.
Right. That's
How else are they going to learn new vocabulary words unless they
learn
them in context? And I don't think it's too long at all. And
I like it.
I gave a copy of the book to my student, Shane,
to give
to his niece and nephew, who are 3 and 7. And he said he thought it would be perfect for them. Heavens, don't listen to anybody saying it's too long or too
short. I love when people put in their reviews, like what children think. That always makes me smile because, you know, I get little comments about what the kids' reactions are. And I think that's the best feedback you can get because kiddos are really honest.
Yeah.
And they're also,
they tell you what they like and what they don't
straight
like.
To the point.
Their comments and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Well, so, Feather, you had mentioned a series. So, how many books in this series?
Oh, goodness. I got on a brainstorming kick and I have like 30 outlined.
Wow.
I haven't written the next one yet. Well, because Pendu already has 3 more of my projects and I've already hired 2 other illustrators that are working. I'm really getting far behind. It takes a long time to get it formatted and edited and all that anyway. It's just an ongoing deal.
So what are your hopes for the book in terms of the marketing?
Marketing is my least favorite part of everything. I've kind of mastered getting reviews.
Yeah.
I'm doing pretty good at that so far. This one has, I think, 57.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. Yes. And it's just a couple of weeks old. So as
Whispers
far as marketing,
got a decent amount of reviews as well.
Yeah, it's kind of stalled out at 61.
Oh, well, that's all, huh?
It's harder to get people to review a chapter book, though. It's longer. So if it's a picture book, people are like, oh, sure, I'll read that. I'll review it.
So do you want the educators to be the primary people that get this book, or do you want it to be in libraries? Do you want both? Sure, we want it everywhere, but where do you want to impact the most?
I think schools, for sure, they're my targeted audience. But I do have a connection, a good friend who's a librarian, getting a little bit schooled on how to do all that. I get to start working on it. It's a lot to work on. But
Yeah, you got to know a lot about a little bit of things to get started. And then you've got to try to make yourself an expert or know how.
My public library in nearby, we're in a really tiny town, but the bigger town nearby, they bought all of my books for their library. And they want me to do a presentation at their summer reading program. So that's exciting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be wonderful. I hope they record it.
Yeah. And I'm getting some school visits together for next year, too. So,
oh, good.
That'll be good.
That's wonderful. Do you read your own books to your kids?
Sometimes. I got to get over this, but I don't really like reading my own. I read to them all the time, but I don't like reading my own for some reason. So they read them. But...
they read them, right? Right. Okay. So who do you like to read when you read to your kids? Who are the authors you like? Who are your go-tos?
We read everything. We like the classics. You know, we were just reading Charlotte's Web the other day.
Yeah. Oh, great book.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
My older kiddos are about to read Island of the Blue Dolphins, which is my favorite. Still, that's one of the best.
Yeah.
We read a little bit of everything. And then I've made a lot of connections with independent authors. And so we've started reading quite a bit of those. I order their paperbacks to support them. And there's some really talented independent authors out there. So, and I'm always trying to recommend them, you know, in Facebook groups and homeschool groups and stuff like that. You know, they could all use some more exposure.
So you just mentioned your favorite children's book. Are there any more?
My favorite, like middle grade. Okay.
All right. So are there any other favorites from when you were young that you still?
You know? All the fudge books. Those were fantastic.
Okay.
Those were so fun. My kids really loved the Boxcar Children and all different ones. Of course, Dr. Seuss is fun for littler kiddos, but I kind of write for the whole age gambit anyway. So I have from tiny kids. The book that Pandu is working on now is for babies and older elementary, middle grade.
Right.
And I'm still working on a young adult series. I'm kind of scattered, actually.
Sounds like you're just very creative and you like to go.
I get these ideas and they just keep going. And I'm just like, and then at one point it'll just stall out and I'll be like, oh, but I wasn't finished with that idea.
it's just part of creativity,
I guess.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a couple more questions, then we're going to open it up. Talk about your beta readers and how you got into looking for beta readers and maybe some of the advantages and disadvantages of beta reading.
Well, I was reading a lot about the whole process. But when I published my first book, I didn't know anything about it at all. I just thought, ooh, I can publish for free now. We're going to do this.
Right.
And we pressed publish and I was so excited. And I was like, ooh, what do I do now? And so it's just been throwing things at the wall and reading everything I can get my hands on about marketing and all of that stuff. But I read that you should use the things that you excel in or things that you're most interested in, or the groups that you're already a part of, to write to those audiences or to use information in those to give more credibility. And that way it's easier to find beta readers that share those interests. So I was already in a ton of homeschool groups because I homeschool with my kiddos and I kind of write educational books anyway. So I was able to find quite a few homeschooling mamas and kiddos who will beta read for me. And it's a neat project for the kids. And I even have a couple of the kiddos that I'm going to mentor because they want to become authors. So it's kind of a mutually beneficial arrangement.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it has any disadvantages at all. Sounds like it's a win-win for everybody involved. Yeah.
I guess with beta readers, the only downfall to that is that you really can't please everybody, even though you try. And, you know, people will have suggestions. And I have once or twice had someone who I didn't take their suggestion and they got a little hurt about it. And they kind of fell off the list. But, you know, you're just never going to be able to make everyone happy. That's just part of life, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's one of the lessons that we learn as authors or as creative people, performers. Yeah. You're not going to please everybody. And there is going to be criticism, whether it's constructive criticism to help you move forward or whether it's the kind of criticism that you want to leave behind. Right. It's totally up to you. I mean, you're the one that's creating the material and,
right,
you know, it's your decision in the end, and it happens. Can't please everybody. And sometimes it's a hard lesson to learn.
It is. It's yeah. hurtful at first, I think, especially if you're a person pleaser. I'm terrible about that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I have a hard time saying no. It's one of those things I work on in life. So let's see here. So we're at 7:37. I think we're going to open to questions. And if you have a question, please raise your hand. Alice, you can unmute and ask your question.
All right. Thank you, Annie. And I so enjoyed, Lisa, your reading, and Leonore, your descriptions of the
wonderful
pages, illustrations, and so nice to hear you, Feather, and congratulations on a truly wonderful book. I've read it a few times, and
it's
absolutely delightful. And I wanted to ask, Feather, did you make a list of all these encounters that the main characters, the Deer family, had and then write the book, or did you just start writing?
Well, I'm an outliner for sure. So I outlined quite a bit of it, but some of it just comes about when you're writing. Something will strike and you'll be like, oh, that's cool. You know, put that in. So it's a little of both, I guess.
And Leonore, I've got a question for you. The illustrations, are they the type that are painting, oil painting or acrylic and then photographed, or are they pen and ink, or you said the colors, so I mean with colored pencils and then photographed, or can you describe what kind of materials the artist used?
You know, I really can't tell.
It's digital art that he uses.
Oh,
I think
he
I think he draws it like he has a drawing pad
and a stylus,
that connects to his
yes.
computer, and he draws it on there, and then he's able to color it in and all that with you know, with the computer. So he does the sketches on that pad, and then he colors it all in.
Well, how interesting. If I didn't know that, I would guess probably that they were watercolors. That's what it kind of looked like to me. But very just lovely, lovely colors. I mean, pretty dense colors for the most part. Gosh, that surprises me that he does it with computer art, but it's excellently done. I would have guessed that this was all original.
Yeah. I mean, he does draw it all himself, but it, you know, on the computer.
Yeah. Well, very, very well done. Yeah.
And then do they bleed off the page, or is there a frame around the...
No, they're all in a frame, in effect. I mean, like, as I said, the text is on the left, and then each illustration is a full page illustration on the right hand side. And then it just has a, you know, a white frame around it. I mean, the page. So no, they're very
just the margins.
They're very clearly, you know, in margins. Yes.
Well, Feather, I'm glad you had such a good illustrator because the text is so good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm very lucky to have found him. Very happy with him.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alice.
There were no hands at this time.
Could I say one more thing about the marketing, sort of related to the marketing?
Sure.
Okay, Feather, I want you to know that you should be extremely happy with the number of reviews that you have so far on Amazon. Believe me, very, very few of our clients ever get anywhere close to that. And for you to have 61 for Whispers, which, by the way, everybody, I just thought was a wonderful book, and I can hardly wait for the next in the series. But to have that, to have 55 or 56 or whatever already for this book, with the book only having been published about 2 weeks ago, I mean, that's fantastic. I'm so excited.
I'm a little floored with that.
She's excited for you.
It's really fast. Yeah. That was a lot faster than my other books, too. Yeah. So I was excited.
I keep looking every day to see how many you have. On everybody, some of her other books, she has well over 100, you know, rave reviews. So I think you're doing extremely well with the marketing, Feather, whatever it is you're doing.
Thank you. I am writing. It's taken me a little bit. Sorry. I have my little 7-month-old niece every day, and her mama comes later and later every day. But I don't have much time for working, but I am putting together what I've discovered about marketing and getting reviews so far to share with the group, because this is just an amazing group of people. And speaking of beta readers, I think that you guys are probably my most important beta readers when I send things to the list. I get the best feedback from you guys, so I always appreciate that.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah. You're speaking of the writer's party line, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, do you want to talk about author's dream team?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. We're filling it all out. But I've kind of created an author group. And it's not even all independent authors. It's a mix. Some of our authors are from small presses as well. But they, you know, with small presses, they have to do a lot of their own marketing and stuff too. But we've got some really talented people on our team. And I had about 60 something people sign up. But, you know, as people do, they kind of fall off when they realize they have to do something and not just take from the group. Yeah. It's tapered off a little bit, but it's just a support group for authors where we, you know, bounce ideas off each other. We support each other's work. And if you want more information about it, you can contact me. Right now, we're just doing a book feature every week. So we'll feature a book from one of our authors and people will read it or post about it on social media or recommend it on Amazon or just anything, you know, leave a review if they have time. That's a little more time consuming, but there's about 15, I would say, really active authors in that group. And starting in July, each week we're going to work with a different author and create kind of a business plan. I've put together a lot of materials for working out specific marketing plans for people. And so we'll just do like a brainstorming session probably once a week with whoever can attend in Tennessee, you know, find different angles for people and help everyone kind of reach their full potential.
That sounds like something to really work towards. You get a core group of people that, you know, really feels passionate about that. I see that helping a lot of other people, you know, with marketing questions. And because it does depend on who you are and what your resources are and how you network.
Right. Or, you know, your background and your talents and your hobbies even.
Yeah.
All different avenues to go with marketing.
And Feather, I believe I told you that if you do draw up a list of marketing tips that you have, I will be more than happy to send that list to our group of clients.
Yes, that would be great. I would love for you to do that.
I'm happy to do that.
I'm sure we would all be really happy to get something like that.
Right.
I'm not saying, you know, I don't draw a big paycheck from Amazon every month or something. So I'm just, you know, I don't have the answers to all your questions, but I can help you get reviews, I think, at least, and get a little more exposure, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm kind of going through the whole getting into libraries thing now so I can write my experiences on that once I go through all of it. So
yeah, I think it's helping a great deal that we are now, you know, that David and I are now putting out our clients' books in ebook, paperback,
yes,
and hardcover, because of course the libraries want the hardcovers.
Right.
Yes.
They're very lovely, even just the case laminate hardcovers instead of the old kind, you know, with the paper dust.
They're
jacket.
More durable.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's perfect for you, Feather. I mean, the case laminate hardcover, because that's what's typically used for children's books.
Yeah.
And they're so beautiful and shiny and sturdy. And,
yeah.
And not that much more expensive than the paperback for people.
Yeah.
They're a lot more affordable to me.
Right.
All right. Well, we're at 7:47. So anybody have any last question for Feather before we get Carol on to talk about Behind Her Eyes a little bit?
There's no hands.
All right.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Why don't you give us your website and any other contact information that you have before Carol gets on, and that way we have it.
So I'm on the DLD Books website with all of David and Leonore's clients, which they are amazing. I have to say they're the best. So it's going to be https://dldbook.com/feathershell, which is, you know, like the bird feather, FEATHER, and then shell like the end of Michelle, CHELLE.
Just a little correction to that. https://, then it's www.dldbooks, all written together, dldbooks.com, and then slash, and then feather shell. So, and the name all written together, and then a final slash. I'm not sure the final slash is necessary, but
no, it's not.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
That's it. And all her books are there. I mean, the ones we've done. I don't think there are any others, are there, Feather?
I think all 8 of them are on there.
Yeah, I believe so. That's what we have listed in the book. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Carol.
I am the vice president of the Behind Our Eyes Writers with Disabilities. And we are so pleased to have you here and listening to the wonderful work about Feathered. I enjoy her books. Every time she puts one on, I've got to read it from beginning to end. So thank you, Feathered. And I would like to tell you a little bit about our program for writers with disabilities. First of all, we have a writer's party line that you can post up to two of your poems, writings for the group to comment on and make suggestions. We have a writer's network where writers will propose and show different ways to write in small courses. And that's something you can sign up for. We have the Magnets and Ladders, which is our magazine that is published twice a year, where we also invite other people with disabilities to just write. You don't have to be a member of Behind Our Eyes to submit something to Magnets and Ladders. We have critique groups, small groups, and they meet monthly. And we have a large critique group that anyone can put something on, and that meets quarterly.
You can go to www.behindoureyes.org and you can find a link to join. You can find links to listen to recordings, both the book launches, our special events, and our telephonic meetings that are archived as well. I'd like to thank everybody for being here tonight, and especially to our guest author, Feather, and for Lisa and Leonor for bringing this book to life.
Oh, you guys were amazing.
It has been a wonderful event. I know that just having the advantage of the description and the narration is a tremendous gift. So thank you very much for a wonderful hour of People Safari.
Thank you so much for having me.